everyone, and welcome to the new episode of the HSG Student Podcast. My name is Sira, and together we are looking for exciting stories and personalities from the HSG.
Today's guest has taken quite an interesting path to St. Gallen. Jing Wu has started her academic journey in Shanghai, originally studying food science, and is now doing her PhD here at the University of St. Gallen, working at the intersection of nutrition, data, and technology. Dear Jing, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me here. It's my pleasure to be here.
Before we get into the different topics, we always start with the same question. Please introduce yourself in one word only.
Curious?
Curious?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In what ways or in which sense?
I think I'm interested in a lot of things, and I think a lot of things can also like get my interest, get my curiosity, and I want to see more of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's also good if you're in research or also in academia or doing your PhD to be curious and to be wanting to find out more, right?
Yeah, I think so. In that sense, yes. But for me personally, I think just finding something out or like learn more, I think it's very fun. And I really enjoy like exploring different things.
Mm-hmm. And also these different things are somewhat also highlighted in your academic background, which took quite an interesting turn, or maybe it's more intuitive than one would think on the first sight. So I already said you're currently pursuing your PhD here in St. Gallen. However, you hold a bachelor degree in food science. Yes, exactly. And you did your bachelor in Shanghai. So why did you do this degree, and what is it really about?
So the degree was food science and engineering. It's pretty broad because it's undergraduate studies, and I think it's all about the whole food supply chain, say like from biology, chemistry, physics, like to food processing, like how a factory works. Yeah, I think it's really everything involved. Also, we had like C++ and electrical engineering because you also need to know how a machine works. So you really learn all different aspects. But I'd say for my program, the focus was maybe more on biochemistry. That's what most labs are doing there.
And what made you choose this degree?
It was also a coincidence, I'd say, because like in China, when you're in high school, you probably don't think much what you want to do because you just want to get the best grades, and then you can choose a good uni, and then you can choose your major. And so I think it's also a bit coincidental in the sense, you know, like you always think a bit about it, but I only intensively like started to look at what majors are out there, where I can go. And then I just ended up there.
Okay, so it was less of a very long planned intention,
No. But
rather also a bit spontaneous out of the possibilities that opened?
Yeah, a little bit. Before you jump into it, you just look at the name, and then you read the description, you have a rough idea, and then you think, yeah, maybe it's fun for me. And then I think that's how everything started.
Mm-hmm. Super interesting. And you also mentioned that the Chinese system is a bit more generalist in the first years of, for example, mm-hmm. university. Do you think that helped you later when switching fields? Because I already kind of spoiled it. You did mm-hmm. somehow switch fields.
Mm-hmm. I say now looking back, I think it's helpful because, as I said, we have C++ and electrical engineering course, like basic courses a little bit. Also, I think it gives you the opportunity to interact with people from different majors a bit more. But now just thinking back when I was there, because you know you're like which degree you're going to get in the beginning. So maybe back then I didn't take all the like super technical courses very seriously because, you know, like if you do food science and you expect you get a job in a similar field, maybe it's unlikely you probably one day need C++ or something. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a good idea to be a bit broad in the beginning. I mean, if you know what you want, of course, it's better you just go get there. But I think people need a process. Like you need to try out and then feel that for yourself because everyone's different. So I really appreciate a bit more general education in the beginning. and also like sets the basics. And also because I switched, and then I can really tell because I didn't do my bachelor master's in food science, and now I can still like achieve my goals because now I kind of have clear research goals, what I need, and I can learn on my own to get there. But if someone talks to me about something still computer science, but it's also broad, but it's not where my goal is close to, then I feel like, yeah, maybe I don't know that much. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if I had the basic education, then I would probably be able to understand a bit more. But now without like the formal education program of like computer science bachelor's, I feel like it's, yeah, sometimes I feel like maybe I don't understand the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay because we can still learn.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also quite a kind of a trade-off between mm-hmm. being very specialized and mm-hmm. pursuing a degree in only one field and becoming better and better and better in it, or then the other approach where you have a broader knowledge mm-hmm. and you know different fields and you're mm-hmm. able to connect the two fields together. So, I mean, there's positive and negative aspects for both versions. And I mean, I definitely agree with you that in the beginning, especially also of the academic career, it makes sense to start a bit broader because you don't even know what's possible and what a specific field or degree holds. I mean, for example, here in St. Gallen, we have the assessment year as the first year of the bachelor's, where you also get to have some insights into every different subject. And so maybe some people start with the intention to study business administration, but then they change to international affairs or economics or even law or whatever. So there might be subjects that you didn't think of, but you actually mm-hmm. prefer, or also a specific focus within that field. So mm-hmm. it's very, very important what you just mentioned. And also now, I mean, because for me, it's also very interesting to think about that. If you would compare Shanghai with Switzerland, I mean, overall, or maybe also specific cities you lived here, in what ways is it different, or are there some similarities as well?
I think they are similar and different. I think the similar things, especially for my master's, you know, you still like attend lectures and then you prepare for exams. It's very similar in a sense. But for PhD, I feel it's quite different because like then you have a topic or you need to define your topic and it has to be novel. It has to be new. And then you're more on your own, and then you feel like everyone's more different. But for me, I feel like my status also changed, you know, like in Shanghai, like I was a local student and here I'm an international student. And then like here outside, everyone speaks German. That's also quite a difference. Yeah, but I think at least at the bachelor's and master's level, I feel how it goes is very similar. But what I like about the Swiss system is that I feel like probably because there are more resources out there per person, so you can rather easily change or do something if you feel like this is not for you. If you say you want to change from business administration to international affairs, it's relatively easier. But still, I think all students are trying to be somewhere and to learn more.
Mm-hmm. What made you come to Switzerland? Just to blandly ask this question.
I think at the end of my bachelor's, I already knew that I wanted to study abroad.
Mm-hmm.
Then I just checked and applied for different master's programs. Back then, I was still thinking, yeah, I'd do food science. So I was still applying for food science programs. But I already knew that I don't want to spend my time in like bio labs. I feel like it's not for me. So I was just checking different programs and check my possibilities. And I applied to universities in the US and here. And then I got the offer from ETH. And I thought, yeah, it's probably a good choice. The school is well ranked and it's a new country. And I also really like it speaks different languages. And I thought maybe it's fun for me to be there. And then I just came here. And then after my master's, and I just got the opportunity to come to St. Gallen and to do my PhD. So I just continued. And so that's why I'm here today.
But you haven't been in Switzerland before starting your master's?
No.
So that means you just, I mean, you did your master's at ETH. So you just moved to Switzerland and directly started studying?
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, a bit before the semester starts, but basically right before the semester started.
And how was that then for you to start at ETH, to also kind of already transition in focus? Was it very tough in the beginning? Because like, not only in terms of studying, was there a lot new to also get into, but then also just from the whole system as a country, how everything is built up. So how was it for you just in the first year maybe?
I'd say I had a rather smooth transition in the beginning because one of my best friend, she's already at ETH. Like we did the same bachelor's program and she's just 1 year ahead of me. So she helped me a lot in the beginning, like to settle down. And I think the school is also very supportive. It has a lot of programs, a lot of sport programs. But maybe in the beginning, I felt a bit lonely. And I think that's also the difference between the Chinese system and here. Here, I feel like the school is there for study. Like you go to lectures and probably study at the library, but no one's telling you what you should do. Or like, it feels like people don't expect you to be anywhere specific. It's more like the opportunities are offered to you. They're out there. And if you need them, you have to go to the right people, like talk to them and figure out how you can combine everything to achieve where you are. But I feel like in China, at least in bachelor's, you know, we still had the concept of class, you know, people who go to the same major, you're the same class, and then you try to do the same thing as everyone else. And people just trying to be similar to other people. You don't want to be too far away from each other. But here it's more individualistic, I'd say, you know, like people just take a break or do an internship and suddenly you feel like, I don't know who to follow. And then you need to find out your own way.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, nobody's going to check on you. So
yeah,
you do your work or you don't do your work.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, that's also a thing many people say about Swiss people. That we are kind of individualistic and everyone likes to do it their own way and also to not be too dependent on others, which can be good, but sometimes maybe it's also a bit, less efficient or effective. If you want to reach a goal, it's sometimes good to work together and to kind of be in a group than just fighting on your own. So I understand these differences. Overall, transitioning to data and computer science coming from food science for me is rather interesting. I mean, I'm neither in any of these fields. So of course, I only know like the basics of the different fields. But what were your reasons for the decision? Because you also mentioned initially you did look for to continue your degree in the food science area.
Yeah. So I think for my bachelor's, I knew I don't want to be in a biochem lab. And then I thought I could do something else. And then actually found at ETH, there's a lab. I forgot the exact name, but I think they're doing like supplements for children in Africa or something similar like that. And back then I thought, yeah, maybe I can do something similar because I want to help children to be healthy. And I think everyone like deserves a good nutrition stuff. And that's how I started. And then I realized, you know, the research sounds fun, but like the process of getting the knowledge, like I actually go to Africa and do the things, I don't know if I would enjoy the work as much. But then back then I already had a bachelor's degree. I already felt like I'm a bit restricted, you know, I don't think I can jump to physics. But then I thought, yeah, like data is also something, you know, we also have statistics courses. And then I thought, maybe like going to the data direction is something for me, you know, like some data scientist is also quite common a job. That's also something that I could imagine myself doing. So I just consciously took a bit more statistics course than necessary. But yeah, and that's it.
Okay. So you also looked at potential synergies you could then profit from in order to get into a new field. So
yeah. Yeah. But I didn't want to ditch everything that I've learned. So I still wanted to combine everything I learned and find a niche position for myself.
And then, I mean, you already mentioned that you then got the acceptance to do your PhD in St. Gallen, but what brought you initially to applying to do a PhD in St. Gallen? And what was your, or is your topic on, or your focus?
I say in the beginning, I wasn't very sure if I want to do a PhD. I was, you know, applying a bit of everywhere. And like jobs, like normal jobs at corporate or PhD stuff. And I think the PhD direction, I was more looking at bioinformatics or epidemiology, you know, something closer to what I learned, but still more data oriented. But then, basically, I just continued the project a bit. I just continued my master thesis project, but a bit different because that was at ETH, but the project was moved to St. Gallen Institute of Computer Science. And then they just happened to have an opening and then they just offered. So like I also told them like I want to do a PhD and then there's an opening. So we talked and it kind of worked out like that.
Mm-hmm. And what exactly was the field of your PhD?
I call it, if I were to name it, I call it like personalized nutrition, digital health. Basically, we are just using loyalty card data from Mirren Corp and try to build automated dietary interventions like through different applications, web apps, mobile apps, or augmented reality, and now chatbot. But I think the core is at data integration and use the data to derive insights and help people to do healthier behavior change.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very fascinating. Also, a little bit complicated. We'll definitely break the different aspects into easier bits in a minute. But then when you actively also decided, okay, I'm going to do a PhD, what was your ambition? I mean, you said you applied for corporate jobs and also for PhD positions and now it perfectly worked out. However, I guess you still had an intention when starting it. So what was it exactly that then made the decision for you to do it?
I think back then I just thought it would be a cool opportunity. I mean, in the end, it's PhD of computer science and I never imagined I could do a PhD in computer science. I mean, normally if you want to switch, you need to start over from bachelor's or at least master's, but not jump directly to a PhD. But I think my supervisor gave me a lot of trust. In the beginning, I was also doubting myself, like, how can I do it? Like, I don't think I have all the basics needed, but I just thought it would be cool to see what's out there. And also, I knew the project a little bit. It's also different, like the expectations you need to create some substance that aligns with their requirements so you get a degree. It's not like you're just hired for 4 or 5 years and then at the end you naturally get it. You have to earn it. It was a challenge for me, but I was like, it's cool to take it, so why not?
I understand, but still, I mean, a PhD in computer science is, I mean, for me, that sounds as if you need a lot of skills in this field. How did you deal with that pressure that was there in the beginning?
I didn't have a lot of mental pressure when I started. I think it's more like when you need to achieve something, we need to build an app. And then what do you know? And in the beginning, I didn't know that much. But then you would just browse around, like watch YouTube videos. And back then we didn't have GPT. You know, you just browse online and try to learn from scratch. But we're also a team, so I could ask my colleagues, and also some colleagues are really helpful. They were just actively giving me hints, say, you know, you can just do this, like look, check this direction. And then you just pour yourself into learning and then just use what you just learned, like to build and to achieve your goal. And it just took time. But I think after some time, you kind of get a hang of it and then it became easier. I think the start is the hardest, but I think we are well supported here. That's also very lucky.
Also, you told me before this recording that steady work should be put over stressed work. So did you also follow that principle in practice?
Yeah, I try to, because I feel like PhD is not a sprint. It's a marathon, so to speak. And so I just try to work in a steady way. I don't think I can be productive all the time and you just need a break. But I just try to be steady and try to achieve something even small every day, day by day. In the end, it's also cumulative. I feel like if you learn anything, if you keep learning, you can only get better. So you don't need to be afraid. But you have to do the work. And it's not like you tell yourself, I can do it, and then you don't do it, and then you're going to be better. It's just you believe in yourself because you put in the work, and you know how much work you've done. You can't lie to yourself. And then I think in the end, the result won't be bad if you actually put the work in.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes in the beginning, it's all very overwhelming and you don't really see the top of the mountain yet. And there's so much to learn and to start. But then I absolutely agree with you that it makes sense to just start. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't even matter in which direction, because you will already improve and you will expand your knowledge as well. Mm-hmm. And then time by time and step by step, you will understand new things that might bring you further up the mountain until you eventually reach the top.
Yeah. I think that's very true. And maybe I think the beginning of PhD is also exploring, because even though I was funded by a project, but if you look at the project description, it's just like couples of pages or dozens of pages. It's still vague, but your 4 or 5 years are not defined by this piece of paper. I mean, it gives you the scope, but in the end, it's your time. And so you can decide what to learn and where your work goes to.
Mm-hmm. But still, it's a lot of work you have to put into, a lot of hours. How did you personally stay productive? Did you find out or figure out some productivity principles for you? Or do you have maybe some tips and insights here?
I think maybe try to sleep more, go to bed early. I think if you sleep well, then during the day, you're just sober. And also here, we have a lot of sport programs. And I think that's also good because I feel like when I work out, my brain is relaxing. But you're also working up, and because I don't move my body when I sit in front of the computer for the whole day. So I think we are in a very privileged environment. You have the people to talk to and you have the sport facilities. Yeah, I think if you feel like you don't have motivation, you can just go to the library or co-working space and then you just look around and you feel like, okay, I should work too.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with you. And then it's just important to also use the possibilities and opportunities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking a bit more about the topic of your research and also what you've been working on for the last years, one very cool achievement of yours was that you received the 2025 Research Award in Human Nutrition for, and now I quote, helping people to live healthier lives. I mean, that's of course very much simplified, but what does it mean in concrete terms and what was this award about as well?
The award is actually about a work, like a paper we published, and the title is Food Coach Automated Fully Automated Diet Counseling. And the idea is just like use your shopping data from loyalty cards and then enrich them with nutritional information, because you can see a lot from your history, like is it healthy or not? Of course, it's not super complete, but it gives you an overview and then tell you where to improve. That's the overall idea, and the paper was more focused on the technical part, like how to build a fully automated data pipeline. So people just connect their accounts and within 5 minutes, everything is there. And also gets rid of manual logging, because like all the nutrition apps, or maybe not all, but like absolutely most nutrition apps out there, you have to self-log what you've eaten. And if you're motivated, you can do this, but many people just drop out after months and then they don't have the support. But with our tool, like people don't need to self-log anymore because they anyway go shopping with loyalty cards. So if they want to stay up to date, they just open the app and then the information is always recent. And I think it got the award maybe because the community thinks it's actually helpful, I hope.
Mm-hmm. And to put it in very simple terms, also for people listening who don't have a lot of technological knowledge, so you would have your card from Coop, and then you buy the different products and they can be a bit better nutrition-wise and a bit worse. And then it's like all tracked directly through this card. And then you would have an app and the data and information on what you bought will be directly imported into the app. And then it's going to be analyzed. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then was it also in a way that gives you, for example, recommendations on what you maybe should improve, or what would then be the idea of the app?
Yes, the original paper it also has a rule-based algorithm developed with dietitians, because you've bought so much, and then we just took the last 10 baskets and get an overview and then tell you maybe you bought like too much cheese, like too much saturated fat from cheese, and then so you should lower the purchase, or we didn't see any or not much veggies or fruits, so probably should buy more. But then later on, we also found like in the limitations, we found, yeah, maybe we should be more encouraging, you know, like just only telling people what you did wrong is also not a good thing. And so that's the behavior change part of it. And that's a like another topic. It's a bigger topic. And it's like a whole psychological thing in this. But that's what I learned later.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I see the point because, I mean, nutrition is something very individual and we have some subjective preferences. And maybe there are some people who, for example, don't really like vegetables, mm-hmm. or some people have more of a sweet tooth, or mm-hmm. others, I don't know, don't eat meat or fish and whatever. And so I can also assume or imagine that it's rather complicated to work with recommendations, because this would depend on many variables, I guess.
Yes, I think it's like a lot of user context, and the data we have, like, is just your shopping data. In the beginning, you have a small onboarding questionnaire, ask you some basics, but it doesn't know the whole picture. And it's like a whole psychological thing, like there are behavior change theories. Probably people already know everything, but they just can't change. It's like people say, I want to be healthier, I want to gain muscle, or I want to lose weight. But it's just in general, and people all kind of know what to do, but it's just hard to achieve the goal. So they need some support. And I think that's where we try to be there, supporting them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to break certain patterns and to give maybe inputs on how I could change my daily habits and
yes.
To, in the long term, improve or reach my goals and become a bit healthier than I am right now. So that's mm-hmm. that's super fascinating. And also here, I mean, we're talking about research, but with this app, it's already kind of in an entrepreneurial way, I would say. The aspect of commercialization is also always very big when talking about research, because there's great ideas, but it's super hard to really commercialize it successfully.
Mm-hmm.
But you seem to have somewhat of an entrepreneurial spirit, because you also participated in the Entrepreneurial Talents Program, for example, of the University of St. Gallen. We did have previous guests who also participated there, and it was always super fascinating what their stories were. Maybe can you tell us a bit more about why you participated in the ETP?
Mm-hmm.
What brought you there?
I think it's actually at the rather later phase of my PhD. In the beginning, it was just like all in my PhD. And later on, I mean, I talked to different people. We collaborated with hospitals, with dietitians. We were also talking to health insurances, because there are certainly like stakeholders in this. And then it just evolved and developed that people, I don't know, like from time to time, people tell me, yeah, this could be interesting for someone. And then at Husky, we're a business school, and then we have a good like supporting environment, and this program was there. So I just applied, and it was also a really cool experience, because like each batch there were 10 people and they already selected. So everyone came in with their idea, and you also talk to different people, and then you realize actually there are many people trying to do something. Maybe not the same thing, but it's kind of similar. Like if you want to build a startup, like the journey is similar, but also different. Mm-hmm. But I think it's good to talk to your peers who are trying to do something together.
And which problem did you want to solve before starting the ETP, and did it actually work out, or what was your progress in concrete terms?
I think my biggest problem when I started was the business model of this thing, because we started out like as a research project, and then the research goal was to see if it's effective in changing people's behavior and all that. But I think building a business, you basically you need to generate revenue, but how? Like, that's not in the research plan at all. Like, who's, because it's not a goal that your research needs to be commercialized or generating revenue, but that's a hard requirement for a successful business. And also I can pivot, but I also can't pivot too much. You know, if I get rid of the whole data infrastructure, that's a different idea. So, but maybe I have to pivot at the end and, or like just change to, so I don't know, like I was just trying to find a business model for our project, for our idea. And concretely, we finished the B2C MVP at the end, and it's out there on App Store and Google Play. Also, I applied for the Bridge grant, like proof of concept. It's kind of like a postdoctoral grant for a startup. And also I was supported by the ETP people and also the grant office to help me prepare. And then I wrote down my plan for where this project will be going and stuff. So I'd say I learned a lot from this, and I also talked to the peers and help you feel better, like that you are not alone and people are having similar situations. It's like everyone needs a website, and and then other people are also trying to push it to App Store, and there are some small things, and then you just talk to them and probably you find something, or just relieve your pressure a bit.
And then you have there, you're directly connected to people who are in a similar situation, maybe with a different project, of course. I mean, the startups are very different, but still some parallels are always there, and so you can really profit from the different perspectives on it. And now, talking about your app that's actually on the App Store and actually public, what is it like? So if I would have this app, what would I see now?
So first, you'd see everything, like the original Food Coach app that won the award. I think the majority of, also like that's the basis, right? We have your loyalty card, we can analyze it. Later, we also learned that behavior changes is much bigger than what we did. It's not just you have to provide factually correct stuff, but you also need to provide people this like mental support even. So we add a bit of gamification. And so you can collect points by actually following our advice. Oh. And we also created some nutrition quizzes. It's kind of like Duolingo, so people want to learn something. And we also integrated with chatbots. But I say like the fundamental thing is that still it has access to your shopping data. So when you ask for recipes, it can tell you based on your recent shopping, so you probably can create this. So this is more personalized because we know a bit more about your context. And also with chatbot, I really see it as a new opportunity because many data or user contexts out there are not as structured. And then it's hard to use them in traditional rule-based system because you basically need data columns. But you say, sometimes some information is hard to put into a structured way, but now with large language models, it can use text, like probably not that structured. So now we just put everything into it, and it's still a bit general, I'd say, but that's also the next step to find out who might benefit the most from it, like find the target groups. And probably it's like doing commercials that you probably need to talk to your customers. But we're on the way to find out.
But are people already using the app?
Not that many, because now we're still like testing and iterating. Like we just pushed it and then we had some test users, but we're not promoting it at scale because we thought we have to make sure at least like it doesn't break and it's somewhat smooth. But later on, we're going to promote it a bit more.
It sounds very cool. Especially since I don't have to manually insert all my data anymore, because as I already mentioned, maybe I do that for a week, maybe even for a month. But after that, it's very likely that I will just stop doing that. I, for example, did that with budget tracking and tracking my finances. I started, but then like adding every single transaction can be very, tiring. And I mean, I guess similarly to food and what I'm buying and ordering and whatsoever. So that sounds very cool. And but that means you want to focus more on the startup. So you want to possibly make it a successful business?
Yeah, of course. That will be a goal. I mean, then it's like a whole new world for me again. And now I also have a bit more time after submitting my dissertation. So I think it's the right time for me to try. That's why I applied for the grant. And again, I think we're very privileged to be in Switzerland. There are a lot of startup grants out there to support you, to give you non-dilutive funding plus support. But I think in the end, it really needs to work, because you can't live on grants forever. Like it actually needs to be useful to people, so people pay for it.
How many people are involved in this startup now? So apart from you, do you have co-founders or?
Currently, it's just me.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the MVP, and I'm supported by my team, and so they help me a bit. And in my bridge grant, I'm gonna have a host institute as well, which is my current group. So I'll be supported, but yeah, I'm open to co-founders. But I think it's important to define what's needed. Mm-hmm. Like now we have the MVP, and we I'm capable of making necessary changes. The next step is really the business model, and it sounds abstract, but it's also not. Like you can measure the outcome, etc. But now we're basically bootstrapping, I'd say. Like, of course, we want more users. Like, you can burn money to get more users, but that's not going to last forever. You have mm-hmm. to be intrinsically, like, basically the app has to be intrinsically helpful mm-hmm. to people, or they see the value in it.
So you would also work out kind of a financial plan on how it could be generating revenue in the long term, I guess.
Yeah, that's the goal. But I didn't make like a huge financial plan, I'd say, because so far it's not that expensive to run it, but it's hard to get the customers. So we're now also trying different ways. Like I'm trying to talk to be customers, because maybe it's interesting for institutions like hospitals or like health insurances. But I have to talk to them and to understand what they need and if we're anyway useful to them. But that's for me to figure out.
Mm-hmm. So there's some more steps ahead of you.
Yes.
But it's super interesting. And I'm sure that as soon as this app is actually being promoted and fully published, mm-hmm. then it's going to be very cool to check it out. And there's a lot of potential behind it. And you've been working on this startup now for a while. What have been your biggest learnings just when it comes to maybe also coming from research and going more into this entrepreneurial direction?
I think maybe everyone's biggest learning is different.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think the biggest learning is that I have to take full responsibility for my decision and trust myself. Especially like I didn't have a business background. And then I walk into a room with all business people and stuff, like talking all the concepts. I didn't even know what they mean in the beginning. And then it sounds right. There's a lot of information, but I still need to make my decision. In the beginning, it's a bit scary, and I try to follow other people because they seem to know better than me, like in the business sense. And I was, I'm a newbie in this world, and I have to listen to other people. But then I realized actually in the end, it's me who has to decide. And maybe they know better about business, but they don't know the product. They don't know the problem as I do. And I have to learn it. I learn from other people, but I can't say I fail because I listened to this person's advice, but I actually need to take full responsibility for this decision. I can't say I fail because I don't know enough, but then that's my problem. So I think that's my biggest learning. Just try to learn, try to put work into it and know everything you need to know. And even if you're not ready, but we have to take a decision, you take it. And if you fail, you just fail. But it's on you.
I couldn't put it better. That's wonderful summarized. And as a very final question, if we should meet again in 5 years and do another podcast, what do you hope we would be talking about?
I can't say anything super concrete, but I hope we can talk about something that's exciting for me, at least. And I'm passionate about, I hope, and hopefully some work meaningful to other people as well. So not just interesting for me, but also meaningful to the world. And some new cool project or old cool project.
And maybe a very successful founder sitting in front of me and talking about this app that is now nationwide, very well known and popular. Who knows?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, but actually, I feel like it. I think startup or entrepreneur world is also very similar to research. And for me personally, I don't care if you label it as research or startup. I think it's about solving a problem and also personal development. Like you, if you want to achieve something and then you actually make it or not, but you become better because you put work into it and you should be proud of yourself.
I absolutely agree. That was a really cool conversation and was super interesting to listen to what you're talking about and what your expertise shows. I mean, from studying food science to working on data-driven approaches to nutrition here in St. Gallen, and even then, as we also now discussed, exploring how research ideas can then turn into real products and real startups. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast and sharing your journey and your work with us.
Thank you.
To all our listeners, thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. See you next time on the High SK Student Podcast.